Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Chandana Balmik, and we're in Mysore, India, and we're studying at the Sharat Yoga Center. And over the last 5 or 6 years, we've made trips to Mysore, and I think every time that I've been here, you've been here as well. It's been really kind of cool. And, you know, we knew each other back then, and, you know, I'm having her on the show to kind of get to know her a little bit so that she can share her story and tell us a little bit about our teaching. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, so let's start with some background information just so, like, people can understand who you are and kind of, like, where you come from. So tell us a little bit of background for you.
So I grew up in the east of India in a small town called Jamshedpur, and I left home when I was 17 to do my grads and my postgrads. After that, I worked in the corporate sector for 5 years. I was into finance and banking.
Oh, wow.
And 2009 is when I decided to quit.
Okay.
And also there are a lot of changes that happened in 2010.
Yeah, why'd you decide to quit? Sounds like a good job.
Yeah, I wasn't growing. Like, there was a steady salary. There was a lot of money, a lot of bonuses, but I didn't feel the growth.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel I belonged there. And so I quit. Like, and also I quit because of gender inequality in terms of salary in India.
Okay.
That was one of the major reasons that pushed me to hit the resignation button.
Yeah, how bad is it?
It is there. Okay. It is there. It's not bad or worse. Like, it's there, it's worse, right? It's not a good thing to have.
Of course, yeah.
So it's there in India. And it was there in 2010 when I, like, finally put down my papers and I was relieved from my job. So that was one of the triggers for me to hit the resignation.
Yeah.
But also I wasn't growing. So, yeah, I decided to quit. And 2010 is when I actually started studying yoga. Like, I started practicing yoga in 2000 with my football coach. But 2010 is when I started pursuing it as a, like, you can say, as a career option.
Sure.
To become a teacher. So I started studying and I got introduced to Ashtanga by Deepika in one of her yoga festival.
Okay.
In Rishikesh.
Oh, wow.
And that same year I was in Mysore. So.
Oh, geez. It happened quite fast for
it
you.
It happened
then.
Quite fast.
And so why was, you had the feeling of being stuck in your career, What was kind of the feelings that were kind of going along with that, that all of a sudden you were just like, I just need to get out of here?
You know, it was like the daily thing of just crunching numbers, attaining targets and getting your salary, but then what?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel that I was like, yeah, I was growing in terms of my career.
Sure.
But as a person, I was actually not growing at all. I was an alcoholic and a chain smoker back then.
Okay.
And 2009 is when I quit everything too.
Wow.
So, yeah, I saw
so many changes.
I had many changes.
But so why did, I mean, I know that you went to the yoga festival and, you know, like, you kind of got inspired to start practicing, but why did it speak to you?
I'm passionate about dancing and I found the flow, the movement in Ashtanga. That is what attracted me first. And the second thing that attracted me was the strength it needs. And as you see, I'm a hypermobile person.
Yeah.
And when I saw myself being challenged with strength and I knew I had to work on that area, I was like, okay, this is where I should be.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, gotcha. That was then the main thing.
And that first yoga class that maybe you ever went to, like, what was the experience walking into that?
So there's a story behind it. I was an athlete in school.
Okay.
And I never knew what is junk food, so I never ate a burger or pizza. My
sure.
parents were like, no, that's not happening in my house. But when I hit college, that was in Pune.
Yeah.
You know, burgers and pizzas happened at 2:30 in the night.
Sure, because you're studying.
Yeah. And I put on, like, a lot of weight. So at 5'1", at 5 feet, 1 inches, I was 78 kilos at one point of time.
Okay.
When I went back for my brother's marriage, and he's my black book, my brother's my black book. He was like, what have you done to yourself? Can I have my sister back?
Yeah.
And he's a sensei. So he was like, and he's a fashion designer.
Oh, wow.
So for his marriage, he made me a a suit which was two size small. So he's like, you fit into this and you come for my marriage. I want my sister back.
Wow.
I went back to my football coach. He is from Bihar School of Yoga, Munger.
Yeah.
So from the first few postures, like I didn't even know like what I was doing. So he was just molding me into postures, but I felt good. And in a month, I saw the changes in my body and I was like, oh, this is good. I need to stick to this.
And you felt good like while you were doing it too?
Yeah, I felt good. Like it was, you can't explain it like how you feel after you do your practice, right?
Yeah. But
at that point of time, I didn't even know what I was doing. It was just like movements for me.
Sure.
But the effect, like how it made me feel, how it changed my body, how it like eliminated what was not needed in my life. I felt good about that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And coming from my football coach, like he has, like, you know, I've grown up like under his guidance, like as a child.
Yeah.
So coming from him and him being a teacher from Munger, one of the most respected schools in India, Bihar School of Yoga, it's into Hatha Yoga.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a good session with him. Yeah.
And so how did you come to the realization that you had a problem with alcohol and cigarettes and all that stuff?
That's a story. So
yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah. I was at a New Year's party and I was so drunk. I didn't realize what was happening, but thankfully and thank God, my college mate was there. Like, I didn't even know we were in the same party. And he saw me being carried away by a random guy. And he fought and he took me back. And I went back to his place. And the next morning when he told me, like, what had happened in the night, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
I have to quit. Like,
and were you drinking daily or?
I was drinking daily.
Okay.
I had a, you know, when you handle the failures in your life in a wrong way. Mm-hmm. I handled my heartbreak with alcohol.
Okay.
So that happened. And so I started drinking every day and I had to drink every day. Yeah. So that is what happened.
Yeah. I can relate to that. I handled every, whether it was a celebration or whether it was heartbreak, I ended it all with drinking and drugs.
I know.
And so that party was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yes, it did. Like, I was like, this is not me. I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
So that's the day I quit both smoking and drinking altogether.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I always find it amazing that people are able to do that because, like, it took me, like, over maybe 2 years before I got to the opportunity to actually get sober. I wanted to get sober, but I was so chemically dependent on it that I couldn't do that. Yeah, so it's very interesting to hear people do that. It's like, oh yeah, you must have more willpower than I.
I guess so. I don't know. I just wanted to get rid of it because, you know, like being in that situation, being carried by a random guy, it's scary.
Yeah.
So I think that was like, I don't want to go back to that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. And thank God for your college mate being
there. I know. I always, like till date, I'm always thankful to him. Yeah. Yeah, thank God he was in the same party with
God
me.
God put him in the room. Yeah.
Yeah.
To look out after. Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about like, you know, like your studies in yoga. Like you said, you made sort of like this formal push over into like studying yoga and like figuring out how to do it as a career. And so what did the formal studies actually look like for you?
So the first thing I was in the Yoga Institute in Mumbai, it was mostly philosophy based.
Okay.
So I was doing a lot of the Yoga Sutras and the Sankhya philosophy.
Okay.
But probably, you know, we are always, as an athlete, I was always attracted to the more physical part of the yoga.
Sure. I mean, it's like what draws us in.
Yes, what draws us in. So I did complete my study in the Yoga Institute, which is in Santa Cruz, Bombay. But then I started Ashtanga. And I think I have kind of, in this study that we are doing now, I found myself in, like, I kind of know myself more and more and more every day.
Yeah.
So it's like you study yourself.
Sure.
Definitely the philosophy and the Yoga Sutras does happen, but not in the, like, the manner it was happening in the Yoga Institute, where it was like more 90% of philosophy and 10% of asana.
Of course.
Here it's like maybe 90 to 10.
Right.
It's just the opposite. But I like this more because understand one fact, like every day in the morning, we spend 2 hours looking at ourselves, like the drishti, looking at our fingertips, looking at our toes, looking at our nose tip. How often we do that?
Yeah.
Like, and that awareness, that awareness, the kind of awareness we build, the kind of self-study we do every day for those 2 hours, it kind of makes us realize that what we should do and what we shouldn't, or what we need in life and what we should eliminate in life. I think that's the study I'm going through now.
Yeah.
And I like that growth.
And yeah, that sounds, I mean, it sounds amazing. I think that a lot of people sort of have this fairy tale about like how philosophy is going to change their life. But when it becomes like very tangible in the physical aspect, where it's almost like philosophy is somewhat bred into our practice, like almost inherently, like somehow, just like how we say like the practice is inherently spiritual, that philosophy is somewhat like wove into it. But if you start the other way, and then it's like everyone's searching for philosophy at some point. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think this is more practical. Like you experience what the philosophy wants to say to you. And then when you go back to the text, you're like, oh yeah, I think, yeah, this is what it meant. And I kind of experienced it like while I was practicing.
Sure.
So it's a much more practical way of approaching spirituality.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you kind of like, it's more about frying yourself.
Yeah.
More and more.
You're cooking like yourself.
Hard-boiled egg. Yeah, hard-boiled egg. And then you're like, so hard is like, okay, fine, I'm ready.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so do you feel like the, you know, all the philosophy and stuff that you learned in the beginning is supporting your practice today?
It is.
Or do you feel like it's different?
It
entirely.
You know, I cannot not say that, okay, the philosophy is not helping. It does. Like, it does help in the sense of keeping in mind what I should do or not do as a person. The yamas and niyamas is what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
But in these 10 years, like, that I've been studying Ashtanga, I've completely, like, kept that in the back seat, and I'm just doing this as of now. So I'm not thinking of the time spent in that institute, because this is my institute. This is my school now.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is where I am as of now. But yes, maybe after some time, I would like to go more deeper into Sankhya. I like the Eastern philosophy. Like, I prefer to study that more and more.
Can you give the listeners an idea of what Sankhya is?
Sankhya is the Eastern philosophy that talks about the Purusha and Prakriti, the constant and the evolute, and like the Bhutas and the Panchamahabhutas.
Sure.
So yeah, I find it more practical, and I find it more interesting. I find it more spiritual. I find it more relatable in terms of our evolving and changing life with the changing times. So maybe in future, I would like to delve more into Sankhya.
Yeah.
But I want to study this more, practice more.
In the last 10 years, you've basically dedicated your life to doing this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels like this is what I need to spend more time on. Yeah. And when it's time, I think I'll know when to go for the philosophy.
Yeah. Okay. It was funny because I was standing outside of the shala the other day, and you know, someone was talking about the feeling that they get when they walk out of the room. And I was like, yeah, I know that feeling is going to make me come back for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, because I've been coming here for roughly 10 years, and that experience, there's something about it that is spiritual. There's something that is related to God, or at least for me, it's related to God. And there's some sort of really powerful energetic thing that happens in there.
Let's put the Sankhya in the practice. Like, there's something constant in all of us. That's our willpower, that's our courage and our soul.
Yeah.
But the evolution that happens is being human.
Sure.
Physically, we are changing every day. Emotionally, we are like different every day.
Yeah.
That's the...
For every moment.
Every moment.
Yeah.
That's the evolution. That's the evolute.
Yeah.
And this practice is something that is much more, like, it's constant. It's like something that never changes because this practice is constant. So when we do the practice, and specifically at that space, which we call our shala, it kind of makes, it nurtures our constant, our courage, our willpower, our good ego.
Yeah.
And that is like the feeling that we come out with, because like the constant that makes us steady, we have nurtured that, and we are like much more grounded, and then we come out of our practice. I think that's the kind of feeling we have.
Yeah, yeah. I'm digging that. That was awesome. And so what do you feel like, you know, inspires you to continue to practice on a daily basis? You know, is it like some of the things that you just mentioned or?
Yeah, like learning more and understanding more of myself and overcoming my fear, my limitation, my thoughts, like what I think I am. Like constantly we are breaking it every day by doing things which we think it's, no, I can't do it. It's unachievable. Like,
right.
But and then in the shala, we kind of do it.
Yeah.
And like, okay, why did I think about myself like that?
Yeah.
So, you
know, why did I listen to these negative self thought patterns?
Yeah, and that's a positive triumph. And who doesn't want triumph in life?
You know?
Life is hard enough. And even if I have that little bit of a like a victory over my fear, I'm addicted to that.
Yeah.
So I will go for that. And I think that is what keeps us, you know, going with this grind of getting up at 2:30 in the morning and then practicing and then teaching. So why not?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't we do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very powerful practice and it's kind of cool to hear you talk about it. And so, what is like some of the biggest lessons that you've learned personally on the mat?
Not limiting myself to my fear. I had a lot of negative thoughts, so I've kind of overcome that.
Sure.
I've dealt with a lot of anger issues.
Mm-hmm.
I've dealt with a lot of negative things about, you know, okay, things happen in life and you want your answers and you want like the people should be punished and all. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
We'll see. Whatever happens, happens. So a lot of changes has happened. So yeah.
So many that you can't even name them all.
I know.
But,
it's,
yeah.
And you know, it's nothing like we think about it, but it keeps on happening for us. And it just... You know, sometimes you're like, oh, this happened today, but it doesn't stay with you because next day something else happens and then something else and something else. So many things happen to us.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'm also wondering, like, you know, as one of Sharatji's, like, Indian students, you know, and basically, like, having him as your guru... you know, like in the West, there's basically sort of been an attack on the teachers, the gurus, and, you know, the high level, people. And I'm wondering like what kind of, impact has that had on you? Has any of the Western talk had any impact on like, you know, how you view the student teacher, guru, student relationship?
I do understand where this is coming from. I did all the like the talks and all the comments and the social media. It was affecting me.
Yeah.
But I was waiting for him to give his final, like make his statement.
Sure, yeah.
And okay, let me also give you a little like thing about my life. I was sexually abused by my ex-husband. So I know what is this all about.
Of course.
But here is this our guru. Our Sharad choice. Here's this man who apologized on somebody else's behalf.
Yeah.
So when that happened, all I had to do is put the picture down, keep my Guruji's picture, that is our Sharad choice, and I'm okay with it because it's in the past, right?
Yeah.
It also taught me, like I told you, I have overcome a lot of anger issues. So my ex-husband never apologized to me, and he's not, so marital rape is not a crime in India. So he will never be punished for that.
Gotcha.
So I had this revenge for, you know, like this need for revenge, like he should be punished. So the day I read his post about his grandfather, about, you know, Patabi Joyce, as if he has the courage and the heart to apologize for somebody else's behalf, why am I carrying this anger and this need for revenge?
Yeah.
It's not doing me any good, but because it's in the past. Let me live my future. So I think now we should just stop talking about it. Like, apologies. Like, what more can be done?
I don't know if there can be anything else.
Exactly. So let's just stop, like, thinking about what happened in the past.
Yeah.
Somebody did apologize. Accept that apology. Giving up an apology on this platform is not easy, but he did. So kindly accept
it. On any social media platform, you're probably going to be attacked for anything
exactly.
that you say.
Exactly. So
or it's never going to be good enough.
Yeah. All I'm saying, kindly accept it and move on.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, from, you know, from the Indian perspective, because, you know, like, it's part of your guys' culture.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, like, the current dialogue a lot is that, you know, Western people shouldn't sort of adhere to any of these guru, you know, student relationships. Like, we shouldn't have those. And my journey has been totally different.
Yeah.
You know, because I do. I mean, you know, like, I am one of his students. You know, it's like I am that. And so I'm just interesting to hear where it's sort of embedded in your culture right now. It's sort of like the tearing down in my country. You know.
I don't even read those posts anymore. Yeah. I'm in that. I'm
I mean, like, I don't really read them anymore either, because they don't serve any purpose anymore.
So if they are thinking about, like, there shouldn't be any guru teacher, like a guru sishya or a teacher student relationship, that's wrong, because without, I'm like, relationship, there's a connection. Here, relationship means a connection, understanding. Without a proper understanding, an open understanding, an open platform understanding, how can you learn or teach?
Yeah.
Like, and without respect, there has to be a line between a teacher and a student, which that line is called a line of respect. There has to be a respect. There has to be a, it shouldn't be a boundary, but a kind of a place where you meet and you one teaches and one learns.
Yeah.
That line has to be there, or else everybody's a teacher, right?
Sure.
Or everybody is like not a teacher. What's the point in calling, like, okay, I'm going to learn from you? So you have to respect that person as a teacher.
Yeah.
I think it's going to turn around. So we just have to wait. There's a lot of noise happening.
Yeah.
It's going to die down soon.
There has been a lot of noise about it. There's been a lot of social media posts and all this stuff. And really, I felt like, you know, Ashtanga for the last, you know, like, year and a half or whatever, it was somewhat being like torn apart.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a little heartbreaking to see, you know, people who are my friends, like, no longer practicing anymore, or giving up their authorization, or putting all of this on Shraddh, or, you know, it's just, they're just over and over and over. I just thought the whole thing was heartbreaking. And, you know, and like I said, it's in our culture right now, it's like there's definitely a like, sort of this pulling apart of many things, not just the stuff that we just mentioned. So I was wondering from the Indian perspective, like, you know, how it felt.
I have been blessed. Like, my teacher, like, my English teacher, she's still in touch with me. And she's
from high school?
From my school. Okay. Oh, wow. And if I make a grammar mistake, she really points it out.
On your Instagram?
Yeah, she does.
You should just send them to her first and be like, edit this for me.
Edit this for us. So I've been lucky because, you know, in India, it's the more emphasis is paid on the studies, like extracurricular activities. Like, yeah, it's okay. You have to become a doctor or an engineer or an MBA. Please focus on your study. And I was just the opposite. So my parents did stop my sports and my dance and my singing and all, and my grades went down. And it was my English teacher who said that you're under me now, and asked my mother, is like, let her do whatever she wants to do. And I picked up all my grades again.
Wow.
So there you go, because she believed in me and I trusted her.
Yeah.
There goes and I still have that kind of a relationship with her.
Yeah.
And I still respect her, and she still corrects me because she's my guru. She's my teacher.
Of course.
So there has to be a teacher-student relationship. There has to be a sishya, guru-sishya relationship.
Yeah.
Because it's something, who doesn't want to be a teacher's pet? Come on. We all like it. Don't tell me nobody likes it. And I'm like, in school, we always wanted to get our golden stars, right?
Right.
We wanted our golden stars or stickers or whatever. Yeah. So who doesn't want that?
Yeah, you're right. For sure. I mean, there's always that one kid that wants to be the bad kid, but there's always a bunch of them
who wanted the stars or the blue or the red, whichever.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So share with us a little bit about, like, your philosophy on the practice. And, you know, like, how do you give this to the students in Pune?
The philosophy, the first thing I tell them is this is that they will only grow when they take this as a self-practice. So I do run a Mysore program in Pune, but it's not open throughout the year, because if I'm in Mysore, if I'm traveling, the shala is shut.
Yeah.
So whenever a student comes to my shala, the first thing I tell them is that I'm not going to be there 365 days in a year.
Yeah.
And the only way to grow in this practice is self-practice. So no matter how much I teach or how much instruction I give or how much demo I give, until and unless they start working on themselves, because what I give is from my body and my experience.
Sure.
What they have to take is like 50% of that and make another 50% of their own experience. And that is how they make the 100% of their practice. So the first thing that I shared is like self-practice is the key. Second one is they have to be consistent. Without discipline and consistent, this practice doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And the third one I'm very particular about is maintaining the cleanliness in the shala. So if I feel somebody is kind of disrupting the saucha, the cleanliness or the positivity in the shala, sure. I definitely ask them to leave the shala, because sometimes it has happened, like they came with the wrong reason, sure. Where the student that doesn't maintain their code of conduct, I kindly ask them to leave. So we talk about the teacher's code of conduct, but sure. I also believe in a student's code of conduct, because these are adults coming to my class. And if they are coming for the wrong reason, I have the full right to ask them.
What would be a wrong reason?
You know, the wrong reason is like, the first thing is they are attracted to the teacher and they come okay. for the class.
So you pick up on something like that. And you're
yeah,
like,
and I was like, you know what? I think you should stop coming. I cannot teach you. I'm very direct with that. Yeah. So I asked them to just leave.
Yeah. So you're pretty strict on that accord.
You know, that's where the line of respect is kind of so like, oh, like they have overstepped that line.
Yeah.
And I have to draw the line again. So I just ask them to leave, because, you know, you have to maintain, like for me, I have to maintain the code of conduct as a teacher. And if I feel that that's not being maintained by them, I have the full rights to ask them to leave.
Yeah, I made that mistake a couple times, like where I had like a hard talking to with a couple of the students and gave them passes, and then, you know, or let them get away with it, and like behavior was corrected for a certain amount of time, and then it popped back or whatever. And, you know, it affects the energy of the shala.
Exactly.
It makes the energy not clean.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I've made that mistake before. I don't make it very often. It's like, I usually say like with our community that there's, you know, not one person is more important than the entire thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's for the community. It's for the entire class that you, if there's one person coming with the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. You can just, like, probably they might come again. And if you think they're coming for the right reason, you give them a pass.
Yeah.
But for that moment, I just want to just draw the line and ask them to leave. Like, keep it clean.
It seems like that. That seems like strict, and that seems good.
Yeah.
I actually didn't expect that from you, but.
Yeah, I do have a strict reputation in Pune.
I'm usually known as pretty strict too, but. So it's interesting to hear you say that, because that's a very like crystal clear point where it's like, if something's not right, you know, like you're given so much energy as a teacher.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so if it's not somewhat reciprocated, or they're there for the wrong reasons, then, there's just a bunch of weird things that can happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And as I said, that there is a relationship, there is a connection. And if they overstep the respect line, that is when they have to go back and, you know, think about what they were doing.
Yeah.
And if they feel they're wrong, if they realize they're wrong, good. If they don't, that's their journey.
And then you let them come back?
They haven't come back yet. Okay. Like, so I don't know whether they realized it or not.
They haven't realized. Realize, if you're listening to this, realize it, and then you can come back to our class.
Exactly. Yeah.
How do you like having a Mysore program? And how is it with the travels that you do?
It's nice. I like it. So I have a home kum shala now.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. I practice and I open the door and students come in.
Okay.
And it's a nice energy to have like a nice clean space, the place I maintain as home to be the shala also.
Sure.
So it's a very nice feeling. And traveling and teaching around is all about experiencing new bodies, new students.
Yeah.
And it's always a great learning experience.
Of course.
And of course, like, it's so nice to connect with the community outside India and in the whole world.
Yeah.
Like, we thrive on that community, right?
Of course, yeah.
I would like to like meet everybody in this community.
Yeah.
I still find myself like I don't know half of the community, so I'm just knowing more.
I don't
and
even
more.
Know half of the people in Mysore now.
Exactly.
It's like I feel like an old timer here. You know, it's like I walk in, I'm like, I've never seen any of these people, and I used to know every single person.
Exactly. Yeah. So imagine if you make more, and this, like, I've made some of my very good friends in this community by just smiling them across the road at 3:30 in the morning.
It's like band of brothers and sisters. It's like we're headed into war with ourselves.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's nice to connect and to communicate and to teach and to learn also. Like, I spend time to be a student, you know, outside India, because Guruji keeps it open, like, just for a few months in a season. So, you know, I would like to learn more and more, and I don't have a teacher in Pune. So I miss that guidance.
Sure.
And as you know, I love being a student. So.
Me too. I like it. Yeah. I like it as well. I only get it a couple months out of the year.
Why not?
Yeah. Over a month out of the year, maybe. Yeah. So why do you think that the practice works for people? Why do you think, you know, like you get to travel around and you get to do these workshops and you got a Mysore community. Why do you think it works? And do you think it works better than other yoga styles?
I don't know about the other yoga styles.
Because you've never done anything else?
I've done Hatha yoga, but that was not under any institution.
Sure.
That was with my football coach, who happens to be a student of that school.
Yeah.
Why does this practice work? A, as I told you, this is something which is constant. You know, as kids, it's very, like, logically we are taught, like, we learn the alphabets, mm-hmm. then we learn three letters, we learn four, five, then we learn how to read sentences, then we read books, and then we read or write philosophies and literature.
Yeah.
And this is something like that. It is so systemized. It is so in line. It is so much in this, like, a methodology wherein everything is set and you practice this again and again, which is this constant practice, and you find yourself every day. You overcome something, a fear every day. You overcome a limitation every day. There's a triumph, as I said, every day. I can say it's addictive, but addictive is a negative word that I'm using, but it's a positive addiction.
Sure.
I think that is what works.
Like, but is it like ritual for you? I mean, is it ritual for you? And do you feel like it becomes ritual for the students?
I think it becomes a ritual because we get up at a particular time, we clean ourselves, and then we go to a practice. So it's kind of something that we spiritually follow, right? And anything that is spiritual, there's a ritual that is added to that, because you have to do that ritual to reach to your spiritual.
Coffee shower. 20-minute scooter ride.
Dry brushing. Lymphatic drainage.
Oil bath.
And also the other thing that really works with this practice is, like, as I said, you constantly look at yourself and you hear yourself. Like, you know, it's like in a group setting where you're inspired with the practitioner on the left or right or behind or front of you, you don't see them, their willpower or you don't see them struggling and overcoming their own practice, their own limitation, but you feel the energy.
Yeah.
And it's such a positive thing to feel. No wonder we are such a tight-knit community over here, because we thrive on that.
Sure.
So that happens, and then it inspires you to do more, to work more on your own self and to know yourself more and more. And in this world where we are constantly distracted with all these, like, we are distracted. There's so much of distraction around us, and there's something that keeps us very focused for those 2 hours. And it kind of gives us a peace and a very stable and a very foundational, like, time to take our day forward. I think that is what keeps us going.
Yeah. How much different are you from when you started to how you are now?
Oh, you should have seen it before.
I'm not talking about body-wise, but mental and physical.
I meant the mental and physical, but mental-wise, it's, I did have a lot of anger issues.
Yeah.
I was known as Jhansi Ki Rani in my office, like in my work culture. Like, if my work came to the operation team, they had to do it first, or else they were scared of me.
Okay.
Like, I did work on myself. And also, I'm happy. I'm happy where I am. I'm happy what I'm doing with my life. I'm happy. I know what I want, or I'm kind of knowing, like, what is needed in my life. I stand up for myself. I take care of myself, and that allows me to take care of everybody around me. Like my parents.
Sure.
I'm very vocal about my marital rape, and one of the main reason I have been very vocal about is because of my parents. They are from a small town. Dad is a businessman. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows him. So for them to handle A, a divorced daughter, and B, the daughter being raped was a hard thing.
Sure.
And I never cried or never felt a victim when things happened to me, because when it was happening to me, all I could think was my future without my ex-husband. So that strength, it came from the practice. That realization that it's okay, whatever is happening, but my future is bright. That came from the practice. My parents, they're not embarrassed anymore. They don't hide anymore. They're like, yeah. So what? It happened with my daughter, but look at her, what she's doing. She's happy.
Yeah.
So understanding like how you can be strong and give strength to other, that is what I get from the practice.
Yeah. How do you stay motivated when, you know, like you have your ups and downs, like with the practice? Or is it all up?
No.
I just thought maybe you were one of the weird people that were like, oh, no, it's all gravy. It's all awesome.
No. I'm human. I'm like 100% human.
But just like hearing you talk, I can hear the discipline kind of coming through, like I can hear it coming through your voice, like, the practice matters to you, and you know it works, and it's like, and you know, like, you do it.
Yeah, like, you do it.
I can hear you.
I hear him. You do. Yeah. Like, there are days when I'm like tired, and I'm like, you know, just basically lazy, like human, you know, have you eaten the wrong stuff the last night, and you know, you're like, oh my God, how am I supposed to practice?
Right.
But it's just that matter of couple of minutes, the first few minutes on the mat. And that's it.
Yeah.
But yes, there are days when the body's like, no, this is it. I understand and I respect that. That day I might be like a light practice of just like the primary with not much of jump throughs and jump back. Giving it just like practicing the breathing and the vinyasa system properly rather than focusing on the entire methodology of the practice.
Sure.
I think that is good enough too. So like just being aware that when it is the lazy Chandana and when it is the tired Chandana, and acknowledging the tired Chandana and giving her the rest. So I kind of try to do that as much as I can.
Yeah. I heard you say methodology and like, you know, kind of like practicing the whole methodology. What do you mean by that?
The Trishtana method, like, you know, vinyasa, doing like properly. But sometimes you're tired and, you know, you might take like two breaths instead of just the one inhale.
Yeah.
That's okay if it happens.
I do it here sometimes.
Exactly.
I'm like, one more. Get my hands above my head because I'm so sore from the day before.
Exactly. Yeah. So that happens, which is okay. Like, we all are human, you know. We are bound to be tired and overexhausted sometimes.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But it's not okay to miss the practice. Even if, like, I'm in an emotional, like, in the down ditch of an emotional whatever well, there has been days when I've just been on the mat and like cried myself out, but I have made it a point to step on my mat.
Yeah.
That is more important.
Yeah.
Stepping on the mat is more important.
So. And doing something.
Doing something. Yeah. Yeah. I have this student, she has rheumatoid arthritis. I've known her for like 7 years. So from just being on the mat and sitting and talking to doing a very modified, because, you know, her practice has to be modified.
Of course.
Like, it depends on whether it's her knee one day or whether it's her fingers one day, her wrist one day. Every day the practice has to change. But she's kind of a motivation for me in terms of learning from her, like, you know, teaching her every day something different.
Right.
And also the fact that she comes to the mat every day.
Yeah.
So I think that's
even though she's in pain in some sort of
there's all place. You know, the like, you are always in pain. There's pain somewhere when you have rheumatoid arthritis, but she is on her mat every day.
Yeah.
So I think that is what counts.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that speaks to you as a teacher too, because then you're able to, you know, I think a lot of times Ashtanga people can kind of put themselves in boxes where they're like, oh yeah, we don't do modifications or we don't do these things or whatever it is, or it's like, I'm traditional, and it's like, I don't, you know, it's like, I don't even know what some of that stuff means anymore.
It has to be body to body.
Yeah.
Like, this body, I have to respect her body. You know, that is what said, like, you have to respect your body. So when you're teaching, you have to respect your student's body.
Sure.
They come with their own limitations. So, like if somebody has a busted knee, I cannot just tell that, no, you have to go right leg first and then the left leg because that's the system. I'm going to injure him more, right?
Right, of course.
You have to modify it for him. You have to have that understanding and kindness and that empathy. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that a lot of times, like, and you can probably speak a little bit about this as well, just because, you know, you're assisting and, you know, like, and helping Shiraji. And so, like, what I think people think is that everyone gets taught the exact same, you know, that every single person has to look like how the books look like on the posture.
Yeah.
And that has been the exact opposite of what my experience has been, you know, the several times that I've, you know, assisted. And so, like, can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's interesting. You asked, like, one day I was doing a lunch and somebody said, in our shala, only when you do the drop back and coming up and do catching, that is when you're given the second series. Or when you do this, that is when this happens.
And catching?
Yeah, and catching.
Wow.
So I was like, have you been to a shala? She's like, no. I was like, you don't know what's happening. For example, take my instance. I am hypermobile. So the way he has been teaching me, it's very different to the way he has been teaching you.
Of course.
Like the asanas that has been added to my practice, the order is different as it has been added to your practice.
Sure.
And only we know it because we have been coming here for, you know, every year. We see it. And when we're assisting, we see how he's teaching everybody differently. So even he's doing it different. It's not this one box.
Right.
It's a method. The method which depends upon, again, the student-teacher relationship. Like the teacher understands the body. And then the method is taught in a way that is most beneficial for the student.
Yeah.
So no, it's not the same. Yeah. It's not the same for...
I mean, people say it's like, oh, it's dogmatic and everyone has to... Or even I hear some teachers be like, well, this is how I was taught, you know, so everyone else has to be taught that way too. And it's like, whoa, we're missing the point here. That's why it's so valuable to assist and watch because there's so much information.
So much.
You're like, oh, yeah, he's hard on someone here. He just gave Taylor 6 arm balances in one class. Like, you know, it's like he makes them do TikToks, but not these people do TikToks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no rhyme or actually there is a rhyme or reason, but like it doesn't make sense unless like you have actually.
You see, like I had the same thing that I've been taught this way, but then when I started assisting him, that's when I saw, like, you know, when you're practicing, you don't see much.
Yeah.
But when you assist, you also observe him the way he's teaching. Like, you know, you're blessed to see that because you have that time to, you have that little window to see that, oh yeah, you know, he's teaching him or her very differently to the person he taught like before. Like 5 minutes before.
Sure.
That changed my thought too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very important to, like, I find so much of learning when I'm assisting in the shala.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
It's really been valuable.
It's very valuable. Yeah. It's such a lesson. Like,
And so how did you figure out, or how did you kind of come to the understanding that Shiraji was your teacher?
He was the first one I learned it from, so he's the one.
He's the one.
He's the one.
Right to, came right to Mysore.
And, right, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And was there like a connection with it, or were you just like, this is where it's supposed to be, or this is where I'm supposed to be, or was there some sort of like coming home with it, or?
It's coming home, like I feel home now, like my Mysore is second home.
Yeah.
But the first few initial years, it was just about coming and learning from him. So there was no connection to Mysore, actually. There was more connection to connecting to my teacher, my guru.
Yeah.
So that kind of like, you know, that I want to learn from him more. I want to go and learn from him more. That was the want that I had.
Yeah.
Now Mysore is home because, you know, you make this amazing connection with the community.
Course. Yeah.
So this is home for us. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like we're, you know, sitting in the house that I've stayed at basically every year that I've been here.
Yeah.
It's like my kids' toys are up there. It's like, you know, we're having internet problems. You know, it's like that happens every year too. It's like everything feels like home. So, what are the things that you struggle with the most with the practice?
Strength.
Yeah. Just because you're hypermobile.
Yes. I have to work harder and harder. And the thing is, the more and more I'm like going into the practice, my flexibility starts going like deeper and deeper. So maintaining that understanding, my joints and not going like beyond a certain range of motion, understanding when to stop. That's been a learning process and I'm still learning.
Yeah.
So that's like, yeah, strength is my, I have to work really hard.
You got to be stronger.
I have to be stronger. Like I often get eat after like my TikToks. He's like, eat. I was like, yes, I'm eating.
I am.
I'm eating. I'm definitely eating.
Three meals.
Thali going down every afternoon.
Thali twice a day.
So yeah, strength is like where I work. Like I have to really work hard.
Yeah, it's just amazing the bodies, like from the very able to someone who really struggles to someone who's super tight to someone who's super bendy, you know, like all of that stuff. It's very interesting to be in that room and be with all of these people in community and like, you know, there's some sort of like common bond between all of us and we're all working out our stuff on a physical level, a spiritual and
mental.
A mental level.
We are all working on something or the other, like every day, every minute in that room.
Yeah.
We're all doing something.
What did you think about the shift between the old shala and the new shala?
It's a change.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like it.
You like it?
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite things is actually I kind of like the drive.
Okay.
It's like 15 minutes away. And so like for some reason, the little drive like clears my head a little bit.
Yeah.
But the other thing I like is that we're not on top of each other anymore.
Exactly. There's space. We are breathing.
Breathing. And, I'm doing these arm balance of third series and I'm like, you know, I still have to flip around. I do it the opposite way so I don't get kicked or whatever. And, but I was like, how did we do this before?
I know.
You know? Like, how did we do this?
How did we manage to do that in that little space?
I have no idea. It's really remarkable. And what a, you know, I get the sense that the whole shift has actually been a shift for, Shratton's family.
It is.
You know, to all of a sudden, like, It doesn't feel as stressful.
It is not.
Because the old shala was sort of like the kiln, or it was sort of like the oven.
Yeah.
Where this doesn't feel like an oven anymore.
You're much more calmer. You're much more like based in that shala.
Except me in the back row. I'm sitting there going,
Oh, that happens in all of us. Okay, I have to work. But I like, you know, one thing I'm really grateful about is he has more time to rest and be with his family.
Yeah, that's
because it's
the
biggest shala. And also, like, you know, it's nice for a change to happen. And
I
was there last season when we were having the lead classes over there.
Yeah.
That time it felt like, okay, this is because, you know, we would have our Mysore in the old shala and then the lead over there. So it was like, okay, what's happening?
Yeah.
But now with everything there, it's like good.
I'm really happy about it as well. At first I was like, oh no, like the practice space means so much. And then I was like, I did a couple practices at the new place and I was like, oh no, actually this feels really good.
This feels really
good. I can walk out and not be like vibrating so hard that like I can't do anything for the rest of the day. I feel energized instead of like having it take.
Yeah, and I'm not overly heated, so I'm working on my strength. I'm so happy with that.
Yeah.
So I feel good about it.
Yeah. So tell some of the things that you got going on this year. Where are you going? Where are you traveling to?
I have not yet planned, so I have to make my plans and everything.
Gotcha.
And I want to travel more.
Yeah.
I think last year I learned my lesson. I burnt out. I was teaching a lot.
Yeah.
This has never happened with me, but in my 9 years of teaching, my students woke me up one day because I slept past two alarms and they kept ringing my doorbell. I did not get up. They had to call me a couple of times. And when I woke up and I was like, what time is it? And when I opened the door, they were like, you need a break. I was like, yeah, I think I burnt myself.
Close the door and be like, see you later.
No. I opened and I was like, you guys start practicing. I'll just take a shower and I'll join you.
Yeah.
I like it that they're understanding that way. It's a nice community over there. I'm blessed with that. But I believe I did burn myself out. I don't want to do that because that affects our practice, you know.
Of course.
I don't want to because I'm still a student. I want to learn more. So this year I want to like, I've not made my schedule yet, but I will make it in a way that I don't do that again.
Yeah.
Because that's not a good place to be in.
No, it's really hard to recover from a burnout.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I went for a holiday after that immediately, but I felt sick over there. I was on bed. Like, yeah. I was so, like, it
exhausted
was
then.
Exhausted. Yeah. Yeah. So not a good place to be.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting that you're getting to travel to places and you know, yeah. like go around and teach and you're yeah. going to Europe. That's all exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is nice. Yeah. I like it. And connecting with students and making stories and making memories. Why
yeah.
not? Like,
yeah.
we're human. We need to connect, you know.
Yeah.
And if you can connect on this level, on such a positive energy level, why not? Why shouldn't we?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and, like, you know, sharing your heart and soul and your philosophy of the practice. It's really been a breath of fresh air.
Thank you so much for having me again. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.